This is All Saints Today podcast, and I am your host, Pastor Wilbur Allen III. So happy today that we have our guest, who is Sherita Gaucher. That's right, Sherita Gaucher. She is a staff writer, and also member of the editorial board at the Canton Repository, and she also is a syndicated columnist. She's a graduate of the Kent State University with a Bachelor of Arts in Communications. And Sherita, I'm so happy that you took some time out to be on this podcast. And as I was sharing with you earlier, and I want to share this with you now, that I truly believe that you are a community asset to the Canton community and the work that you're doing at the Canton Repository. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for those kind words and for your invitation. And I appreciate you actually even thinking of me. Looking forward to our conversation.
I tell you, I'm working on a three-part series of a podcast dealing with our Southeast Canton and the effects of the urban renewal, which came through in the 60s. And there was a wonderful article that you wrote in the Canton Repository. The article is entitled, "It Broke the Neighborhood: Malone Students Capture Voices from Southeast Canton." And I really believe that this is a most powerful article, an article that I believe is essential for our community. And I just want to ask you, what was the inspiration for this article?
Well, actually, it goes back farther. I did an article on the Cherry Avenue Business District back in, I believe, 2010.
That's right.
You know, every writer has that list of stories that they want to do. And that was always on my list because I'm old enough to remember Cherry Street. I was a kid, but I have, you know, pretty vivid memories. My aunt worked at one of the drugstores down on Cherry, and I'd go in and visit her. And, you know, they had the big red leather stools at the counter, just like something out of a movie. And that was one of the stories I always wanted to do. And I did a couple other stories later on. Last year, I did a story on Dr. J.B. Walker, who was one of the first Black doctors in Canton.
That's right.
The first Black doctor, and he had his office on Cherry Street. It's just been kind of a progression. And I did a story on the Lafayette neighborhood. The people that lived there had a reunion last summer.
So that's this, right.
And a lot of those people from Lafayette were the subject of the latest story. It was a project with Malone University, Dr. Jay Case, and his students did video interviews of those people to have it for history's sake. You know, people need to know their history. Cantonians need to know their history. And that's really how, so it's really been a progression of stories.
I got to ask you this question. What drugstore was that, or a store out in which your aunt worked at?
I think the owner's name was Joe Israel. He was Jewish. There were two, I think there was Cozy's drugstore as well. So there were two drugstores on Cherry, and she worked for Joe Israel.
So you have memories of this neighborhood.
I do, even though I didn't grow up in the Southeast End. I grew up in the Northeast End at Crystal Park.
Yes, yes.
I think every Black person in Canton who was alive at the time when Cherry was alive has some kind of connection to it. Whether you went down to ate there, or your church was down there, or, you know, the nightclub you went to was there. You know,
that's,
you know,
right.
Everybody has had a connection.
I remember talking to my mother and my father and my uncle and my grandmother, and they all have fond stories.
Sure, absolutely.
Southeast Canton. And as you know, our church is right next to where Jackson Pool was.
Right.
And And so many of them in that generation, they learned how to swim in that pool. And
I think one of the biggest myths about Southeast Canton is that it wasn't a neighborhood. When it absolutely was a neighborhood. It absolutely was. It was as much an American neighborhood as anywhere else, an all-American neighborhood where you had people who worked hard and were responsible and parented their children, and everybody knew everybody and everybody looked out for everybody. People loved the Waltons. You had it there. You really did. You really did. So I think that's the biggest myth that dogs the Southeast in, that it's not a neighborhood. It's just where poor folks live. Well, that's not the case at all. It's not the case at all.
You bring up a very good point, because Dr. Case, I did a podcast with him last week, and they were talking about the type of community that was in the Southeast End. And even in your article, you even state these were hardworking people, a tight-knit community. And then they brought out the point, and this is where the tragedy comes in. Once the US 30 project, the Cherry Avenue overpass, came through and displaced 1,500 residents, 300 churches, businesses, and homes were eliminated. It created this current neighborhood where there's crime and poverty, saturation of subsidized housing.
Yeah, and every good community, every good neighborhood has certain elements. It has good housing, it has good recreation, it has retail. You know, it has safety. And if you don't have those four factors, you're going to be struggling. You're going to be in trouble. The main issue with the whole Route 30 was the people, the powers that be saw no value in that neighborhood. They saw no value. They saw black folks. They saw immigrants, you know, Italians, Greeks, whatever. And they saw no value. And
I remember Dr. Case,
affected by their decisions, they had no political power.
That's it.
Because I promise you that wouldn't happen in North Canton. I promise you that.
You're 100% correct. You are 100% correct. And Dr. Case, that made, because even in your article, you talked about Robert Moses.
Right.
And Robert Moses, I guess he was notorious.
Right.
For displacing folks.
And acted with impunity, because he was, you know, he wasn't an elected official, so he couldn't be voted out, and the mayors were too afraid of him because he had accumulated so much power.
And that's interesting.
Yeah, he destroyed whole swaths of New York.
Yeah, because in your article you stated, I guess, like over 500,000 people in New York, were displaced.
Right. And what could they do? Obviously, they couldn't do anything, and the people that could do something weren't willing.
Well, I got to ask you this question. I really have to ask you this question. And your article speaks to this. You have the urban renewal, the negative impact of urban renewal, destroying lives, destroying generational wealth. Now, and I'm sure you are aware of this, you have this whole phenomenon, especially very much in the late 20th century, of gentrification. Mm-hmm. And where with gentrification, the powers that be come in, and or economic or marketing market powers come in, forces, I should say, where they would drive the value of the properties down, then swoop in, seize the property, redevelop it, and then it would be too expensive for the folks who were living in that community, and they would have to leave. Mm-hmm. And I pose this question to Dr. Case, and I'm concerned. We have a housing deficit in the United States. Mm-hmm. Last I read, it's like 3.2 million homes were in a deficit. And I'm concerned, like, neighborhoods like this are somewhat vulnerable to folks coming in and moving forward in a gentrification process or project, and then folks are displaced.
I can't envision that happening in Canton.
Okay.
Because gentrification, it hinges on people's desirability or people's desire to live in a certain city or a certain community.
Mm-hmm.
Canton is not a magnet. If you could look at Stark County from 10,000 feet, it's like a donut. Hmm. All the you know, growth and development is everywhere but in Canton.
That's true.
At least for working class folks. Let me put it that way, because you know there are you know, we do have the industrial park on Allen, so there's a lot of jobs, but for some weird reason it's not translating into population increase in the city. People aren't moving into the city, and you know, everything's connected. Everything mm-hmm. everything in life is connected.
That's
but,
true.
You know, if you have you have to look at schools. Again, you have to look at you know, retail and all those things, all those factors matter. And if you're lacking in any of that, you're not going to be a magnet for people. You're not.
I always think about something you had said earlier in terms of people having to know their history. And we do have a younger generation that's coming on now. They really do not know the story of the right. Cherry Avenue neighborhood.
Right.
So I'm glad that you wrote this article, and hopefully this information gets into the hands of some young people. And I'm thinking about some of the businesses. There was Beanie's Chicken Shack.
Sure.
Wasn't there a roller skating rink down here?
There was.
And
you know, again, you don't have those recreational things that people had, and we have to start asking ourselves some hard questions.
Yes.
You know, we do, because people aren't going to take the risk of opening and building those places if they're going to have to be worried about violence or you know, out of control kids. They're not going to do it. So we as a people are going to have to start having some hard conversations, I believe. And that's probably an unpopular opinion, but it's mine. So,
but it's a good point, because there's a certain amount of responsibility that we have to our own community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I remember I did some research on this area when I first came back to town, and there was just a whole listing of businesses that were here. Restaurants. I was shocked when I read about Southside Cab Company, mm-hmm. that there was a taxi cab company that served this area.
Sure.
And then I even read there were some churches that were displaced and actually ceased to exist,
right,
because of this. Of these two projects.
You know, the thing about Cherry is it was born out of necessity.
Hmm.
It was born out of necessity. The reason there was a Southside Cab Company is because you couldn't get a cab.
That's right.
You know, you couldn't get it. You couldn't walk into a Mergus's restaurant downtown or the Onesto Hotel and say, "Hey, I'd like a room." Well,
exactly.
You'd be shown the door.
So, that's right.
So in some ways, you know, obviously integration is a good thing, but we lost our grip on what we had on our
that's
assets.
True.
We just kind of neglected, you know, that those should have been generational businesses, like, again, generational wealth. You know, and we just kind of, we can go here now, so we don't have to worry about down there.
That's true.
We don't have to go down there. We can go here.
That's true.
It's newer and it's nicer and it's shinier and it's, you know, instead of valuing what we already have.
And, you know, it's very interesting you brought that up, the whole economic piece. I remember I read Martin Luther King's last speech right before he was assassinated, the speech that he gave in Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And a good portion of that speech dealt with economic self-empowerment.
Right.
And I think that's something that we have lost.
Absolutely.
As a community.
But I will say I do have some slivers of hope because I do see a renaissance of Black businesses in Stark County and in Canton, which is very heartening. But yeah, from between the 70s and now, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a desert. It was quite the desert. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was actually rewatching Malcolm X last night. Denzel Washington.
Yes.
And Malcolm X talked about, you know, self.
You know, yes.
Black businesses own, you know, Black economic power.
That's right.
And, you know, people were so busy, you know, thinking that he was like this terrorist. And it's like, you're not listening. Listen to what mm-hmm. he's saying. You don't have to agree with everything somebody says to understand that this part of what he's saying is spot on. So,
and the one thing that really hurts me about the demise of this community was it was a self-sufficient community.
Right.
And I remember my mother, she said this several times when she was coming up. They lived over there on 14th Street Southeast. And she was saying how they had everything that they needed in the mm-hmm. Southeast End. She said, you never had to leave Southeast Canton to go purchase something.
Sure.
And
that's what you want. That's what you
yes.
want. I mean, there are neighborhoods here where you can't just walk to the store or, you know, people have to go across town to buy a loaf of bread.
That's right.
And that's wrong.
That's wrong. Right.
And it, even if you look at a city like Massillon, they're self-sufficient. They don't have to go to Jackson Township for anything if they don't want to. And
that's
really should be the goal of every community.
That's right.
Every community should be self-sufficient.
And I remember reading in your article, it was talking about how tight-knit of a community it was. And I don't know if you know, do you remember Melvin Howe?
Sure.
Okay. I remember talking to Melvin Howe about Southeast Canton, and he told me it was such a community. No one locked their doors.
Mm-hmm.
And children could go from house to house. You know, if they were playing at a friend's house, they could have dinner with sure. that family. And it was just a community that loved each other and they looked out for each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
they were people of the same mind. They shared the same values, the same outlook. They all wanted the best for their kids. And you know, they were all in sync.
And, you know, and when I consider that, Sherita, I have to be honest. I think most folks in my generation, we never really experienced that here in Canton.
Right.
I grew up in the Northeast End, just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talked to Mr. Howe, it was something I wish I hadn't experienced. I wish I had experienced that, I should say. Being in a tight-knit, supportive community.
Right, right. I like to say, you know, I'm a member of the last generation who remembers when things were different.
Mm.
When you know, if you know, parents stuck together, adults stuck together. If you did something, you were seen doing something you weren't supposed to do.
That's right.
The neighbor could call you out. and rat you out to your parents. So oh, yes. You get in trouble twice.
Well, you know, yeah, that's right. That's right. And you know how that was back in the day. At least I was told stories. If you did something wrong, you were disciplined by the neighbor.
Absolutely.
And then they went and told your parents, and then you were disciplined a second time.
Absolutely. 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 Like I said, adults stuck together.
That's right.
You know, if the teacher called you out, you know, teacher didn't have to worry about the parent coming to school to, you know, cuss them out or whatever. It's like, no, adults stuck together.
That's true.
And you know, taught children, you know, to respect the adults. You don't have to agree with someone to respect them. You know, especially as a child, it makes your blood run cold when you see how, you know, when you don't see that in evidence in a lot of cases.
That's true. That's true.
You know, Canton, I love this town. It frustrates me as well because I remember how it was different. Again, you know, the recreational facilities we had, I think there was a public pool in every quadrant.
That's right. That's right.
We had the zoo and, that's right. And, you know, so there were things for people to do.
And, that's very true.
But then it ties back to economics. You know, this was also, you know, a muscular little town which had a lot of steel mills and a lot of places that had good paying jobs where, you know, a man could get a job and his wife could stay home. They could raise a family and their kids could still go to school. Well, that's those right. days, you know, those days are gone. And it's part of a worldwide shift in economics. And I think Canton's mistake was when the world was going toward information technology, we didn't take that off ramp. We still hung on to manufacturing and we missed it. We missed
that's
it.
True.
And you know, hopefully, you know, we could still catch up, but I think in the '80s when things started, you know, heading toward technology, we were still digging in our heels, trying to keep the steel mills. And here we are.
And then you bring up a good point about the current economic climate, of course, and how things are changing so fast, how economies are changing so fast. And so when I think back, you know, the Lafayette Street Southeast, the Robin Court Southeast, all these old streets, especially Lafayette doesn't exist at all.
Right.
And I was told that a part of Lafayette is under the Cherry Street overpass. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, moving forward, looking to the future. I just thought of this. Of course, Canton has struggled with brain drain. Talent drain. Mm-hmm. So then as a community, what would be the best path moving into the future in an effort to recapture this sense of community?
I think for one, you have to let younger people that are here right now know that they're wanted. Mm. And you have to provide them with the tools and the means of staying. For instance, not everybody's meant to go to college. Fine.
It's
but
true.
There are jobs in welding and vocational jobs that pay way, you know, I know plumbers will make way more than I do.
Yes. Likewise. Likewise.
And also this should be a fertile ground for, if you're a young person and you want to start a business, we will do everything we can to help you start a business. If you and not only start a business, but help you find housing. There are a lot of empty houses in this city.
Yes.
That maybe could be refurbished, remodeled, you know, redone. Mm-hmm. There's a suburb up in Cleveland. I can't remember the name of it, but they offered to pay off people's loans if they moved in that city and stayed for like 7 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I actually did a column on it and I can never remember the name of the suburb, but I mean, start thinking. I hate this term, but outside the box, you know. But, you know, get creative. You know, go to some cities where, you know, where people are going and why. Ask yourself, you know, why are you leaving? Ask yourself why. Because there are jobs here.
Yes.
But young people also want culture.
Mm-hmm.
And they also want things to do. So, you know, there's a lot to look at, and there's a lot for us to think about. But I think we need to be a lot more progressive in terms of letting young folks know we want you here. We want you here. This is a good place to be. You know, we want you here.
That's a good point, because I remember I was on the school board for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the issues that came up in many of our meetings was the fact that we just could not keep the talented students here. Once they graduated, they would move on, and many times they would never come back. And I think if we had that creative thinking, that out of box thinking, as you're saying, that would be very helpful. But I agree with you. Canton is a traditional thinking city,
mm-hmm.
where there isn't that progressive thought. My one solution I had was, if only we could find out what other cities are doing.
Yeah, good ideas are made to be stolen, as the joke goes.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sometimes it may just be as simple as, what can we do to keep you here?
Yes.
What would make you stay here? What would make you want to put down roots here?
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, people are leaving here and going to New York and going to Chicago, going to Pittsburgh.
That's right.
It ain't because of the weather.
That's right, especially Chicago.
Yeah, so I mean, even Columbus.
Yes.
So I mean, so what is it?
So I like that the young people, the next generation, is going to be essential to bring back a renaissance, if you allow me to say,
right,
of this area. I've got to ask you this question, Sharita. What inspired you to go into the newspaper business?
You know, let me tell you something. This was not my dream. I did not pick this job. This job picked me.
Okay.
I always wanted to do be a TV producer.
Oh, okay.
I had no interest in being a reporter. To me, reporters are like, you know, when you were a kid, there was always that one dog in the neighborhood that chased after every car.
Yeah.
Well, that's not me. I'm not an A-type personality by any stretch.
Okay.
But I met one of the editors at, because I helped start the local Habitat for Humanity chapter.
Okay.
And he was a volunteer. Got to talk, and we were, you know, we became friends. And at the time I was doing the window displays at the old Stern & Mann department store. I was perfectly happy doing that job. I like doing it.
Okay.
But you know, he's like, well, what do you want to do with your life? And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe try what you're doing. And I ended up going there and becoming an editorial assistant, which is, you know, basically a gopher. But I was perfectly happy doing that again. But then they had me rewriting press releases, and they must have seen something they liked. I don't know. And they hired me on as a reporter. I don't have any reporting training experience, and I struggle because of it. But you know what? It's been a heck of a ride. Let me tell you, it's been a heck of a ride.
Yeah, I think it's so wonderful when I see your articles, because actually, you know, seeing your articles in the repository. These are articles, as I said before, are thought provoking, and your articles are progressive. They really are progressive. And I just hope that there's other African Americans that will be inspired, to be a reporter, to be an author. And I tell you, one unique opportunity that's available now due to technology is self-publishing.
Right.
And so I'm hoping some other folks, African-Americans, we need more African-American writers.
I do need to make a correction. We do have a Black sports writer.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're not in the newsroom. So I literally have never met him because we're all working from home these days.
Oh, really?
Since COVID. Yeah. So I literally never met him, but I know him, you know what I mean? But yeah, so I stand corrected. We do have a Black sports writer.
Okay.
He's probably the first Black full-time sports writer in my memory.
In Canton, yes, that I know of, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, I just hope others would be inspired because, have those voices on the internet, in newspapers, writing books. That shapes folks' thinking as well.
Yeah.
Other than rappers and, that type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, journalism still matters. It, as the saying goes, if we don't tell you, who will?
That's right.
Who will? Because you can't trust what you see online. There has to be some kind of accountability.
That's true.
And if there isn't, we're going to be in trouble. We are in trouble.
Yes. Yes, we are.
In a lot of ways, the whole AI thing, we don't know how that's going to impact things and shake out. It's coming. We know that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Well, Sherita, I want to thank you for your time. And I praise God for your contribution to our community. And I say that Canton is blessed to have you. And if no one else ever tells you, but you are a community asset to the city of Canton, greater Canton, I should say.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, folks, please share this podcast with other folks. It's going to be a 3-part series. This is the second in a series of 3 having discussions about Southeast Canton, as well as the impact of urban renewal. Now, just remember, you go to allsaintstemple.org. We have virtual Bible studies. We have podcasts as well as virtual worship resources to help you with your walk with the Lord. Blessings to you.